The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Guess who's back?
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects at agent_70 on Twitter.
We are live with 200.
Indeed we are. And we also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
What's happening, everybody? In lieu of a fancy tuxedo shirt, you get this crappy, awesome facial hairs.
Oh!
I mean, also facial hairs, shave.
Facial hair bros are back.
Yeah.
You need a higher definition camera.
Oh!
I'm good.
I want to zoom in on each hair individually.
That other voice you hear is at PCN_dirt.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. This is a live video feed, regardless of what you might think.
Nice static image there.
I don't know what you're talking about. I always look this way.
And for episode 200, we thought it'd be nice to have a guest on with us, so we invited friend of the show, William Bruce West, on with us.
Hey! Congrats on 200.
Thank you, pop culture expert himself.
That's right. He's forgotten more pop culture than you'll ever know. I may be paraphrasing your catchphrase, but that's pretty much how I understood it.
Nope, that was exactly right.
So remember to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. On the homepage, you'll find links to our social media accounts. We're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+. Also, while you're doing that, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and YouTube. How's your cold doing, by the way, Agent 70?
Hanging in there.
We are part.
My voice came back, at least.
Yeah, that's good. We are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us. Do it today. And while you're there, make sure to buy some Comic Book Chronicles merchandise by going to their shop. That shop.cspn.us. We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And make sure to use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles or CBCron when you're discussing comic books to join in on the conversation. So we have books from last week and this week to get to. So without further ado, we're going to kick things off with Civil War II, The Oath Number One. So this is taking, a page out of, I forget what book it was from the original Civil War, where, at least for that issue, it was Tony Stark going to visit the dead body of Captain America after the superhero Civil War. So this time we get Cap going to visit the whatever state you want to call it that Tony Stark is in, and he sort of goes over his evil scheme as Hydra Cap, and we get sort of a glimpse of the future and some tie-ins to the vision that Ulysses gave to the superheroes that involved Miles Morales, Spider-Man, and Cap on the steps of the Capitol. What do we think of it?
Just when we thought we were done with Civil War II, one, and also, so not Rhodey, he went to Tony.
What about him?
Say again?
I said he... Well, I guess that makes sense. He went to go see wherever Tony was, or quote-unquote buried, or whatever the case may be.
He's in stasis. Well, it's like he's in stasis, or like a suspended
animation. Yeah, I know, but... Yeah, yeah. Well.
But it sort of... There's some nice visuals, and I guess it was revealed here, and I guess in the issue of Captain America, Steve Rogers, that came out last week as well, that Cap is the new director of S.H.I.E.L.D. again. So we got to see his swearing-in ceremony. And they finally, I guess... finally revealed how in was it Marvel books over the years, there's always the scenes of the alien ships with the little tentacles coming out of it, attacking the Earth. And they've never said what that was in reference to. Everyone just figured it was Martian invaders, but it looks like it actually has to do with Hydra getting their tentacles into all facets of the world, which I'm sure that's not what they planned initially, since they had no idea they were going to run with this Hydra Cap story like 4 years ago.
Right.
That when they were dropping these clues.
Or did they?
No. No, they didn't. Very much an 11th hour team. What are we going to do here? Crap, I don't know. Come up with something with Hydra.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, right.
Quick, we're publishing next week.
It's on the TV.
It sort of reminds me of wrestling, of like, you know, they put these plans in place but don't have any idea how it's going to, you know, the end game.
Well, let's not insult it that badly.
The big one that comes to mind is who was the Black Scorpion years ago in WCW.
Or when Stone Cold got hit by the car.
Yep.
Whoever it was.
And then it was
probably The Rock.
Rikishi.
Oh, that's right.
I did it for The Rock.
That's right.
But we did get a cool scene of Undertaker chokeslamming him off of a cage into the back of a pickup.
Oh, off of the cell.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my heaven gosh. Says.
So maybe
we've evolved into the wrestle cast all of a sudden.
Maybe we'll
shout out to the wrestle cast on the CSPN network.
Maybe we'll see something like that play out with Cap and Miles.
What, Cap gets run over by a car?
Oh no!
No, they're gonna fight in the Elimination Chamber.
Oh no!
And then Miles accidentally impales him on a piece of the cell.
I don't know why I just did that in the shot.
I would watch that pay-per-view.
The drum sound, it seemed fitting.
Yeah. So, excuse me. I wanted to mention during Oath that the speechifying that Cap does, you know, to a certain extent, still echoes the voice, the familiar Steve Rogers voice that we know. But obviously, you know, this is the facade that's been put up to fool the populace and, you know, and all the other heroes as a result of, you know, the Kobik Hydra Cap stuff. But, you know, to a certain extent, you know, you're reading it and you're listening and you hear the Steve Rogers that, you know, you've always known, but knowing, you know, what's coming. And then when we get to the end where, you know, we get to what, you know, Hydra Cap really envisions as the future, you know, it's a pretty, you know, it's a much more important issue than I think anyone really expected. I was very surprised to see multiple copies of this issue in stores, even smaller stores this week. You know, I thought maybe some people might snatch this up as a precursor to, you know, upcoming storylines, you know, as something to maybe not a, and maybe not as an investment or as a speculative buy, but at the end of the day, it seems pretty pivotal. It might be, you know, a reason to, you know, go out and make sure you have a copy or two.
If anything, at least leads, or at least starts to lead into Secret Empire this summer.
Definitely.
Because got to have a yearly event along with other events to lead into the event.
I just thought it was really timely with, like, what's going on with the world, because he basically said everything except for, I'm going to make the Marvel Universe great again. Like,
yeah.
When he's speechifying and everything, he talks about how, like, he listened to the people who weren't being listened to, you know, is like the like middle America that the heroes had sort of forgotten because they were too wrapped up with their own egos and their own battles with each other. And I just found it just very poignant for, like, when it was released, like, it was just kind of, it held more power than if you read it, say, like 5 years from now.
But that or was 2 years much, ago.
That was pretty much the same message though in, oh, what was that Civil War tie-in series the first time around about the newspaper?
The Frontline?
Yeah, Frontline, that terrible series. That's like basically the same thing that was doing. It's like, you know, you're Captain America, you don't know anything about NASCAR and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, what? Like, this is, shut up.
Like, oh, right, where they said he didn't have a MySpace account, which really dates that issue.
I when I was, you know, unpacking the boxes, whatever, I pulled it out, I kind of flipped through it. I read it and I was like, "Eh, well, I'm, you know, it's just I'm over Civil War, you know. It's
There is that.
At this point, to see something else come out that had the Civil War branding on it, it was just like, eh, you know, let the donkey die. Stop kicking it.
The problem with Civil War is the decompression of it. Like, luckily, I'm kind of like 4 months behind with Marvel, but I did read Civil War 2, and I read it in one night. And like, to read it that way, then it's a decent story, but I can't imagine reading it over the like 9 months or whatever it took for it to come out.
Like we did. Yeah.
It was slow torture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was Civil War 2, The Oath. Let's see, another big book from Marvel last week would be Inhumans versus X-Men number 3. And as I intro that, the main takeaway, though, or the main thing I remember from the book was the X-Men have the upper hand, at least at the opening salvo of the series. They've taken the key Inhumans off the board, mainly the royal family. A bunch of them are stuck in limbo, and it's just the new humans left to rally and mount a comeback. And so we get that with bringing Miss Marvel in, and Moon Girl, Devil Dinosaur, Inferno, and Iso take on with Wolverine, and I forget who the other person was. But they get the upper hand because the
Forge.
Yeah, Forge. The veteran X-Men underestimated the kids. So I'm wondering if this is going to be like, you know, in the beginning, the X-Men have the upper hand, and then as the series goes on, the humans come back, and then they find some middle ground to end.
But Tim, you should be writing these, Tim.
I will say I'm a bit impressed with it, just because at least the story is moving along. It's not a lot of sitting around that kind of happens with these stories. But we are hitting like the midpoint. So this is usually when that happens.
No, I believe you're absolutely correct on that. I do like some of the developments for some of the, even though Karnak has his own book, I kind of like the little sequence in this issue that he's got, because it's him against young Jean Grey. You mentioned earlier that, you know, the major Inhumans, especially the royal family, have been taken off the board. I think they're teasing. The cliffhanger image at the end of this issue really teases what's going to happen when they figure out how to free Black Bolt, because they show him pretty much as neutralized as he's probably ever been by powers that aren't like, you know, demigod or like Asgardian level, at least. So they're coming from a pretty deep hole that the X-Men have put them in. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how the Inhumans strike it back as it is.
The one thing that I really like about this series is that, you know, I am not well versed in the modern X-Men titles, and the Inhumans, I read the series, but a lot of times, like, I don't track names very well. People have to mention like something that they've done, and I can be like, oh, right, that was that guy from that one issue. But if they just say, hey, look, that's Frank McGee, like, who? Like, you know, that doesn't mean anything. But the one thing I really like about this series is that it's really picked like three or four threads, and it's following those threads. You know, for the most part, you're focusing on just a core group of characters as they're caught up in this and being carried through it, as opposed to a lot of times what we get is every two or three pages, it's flipping to another character in another spot, you know, trying to show you this overview of everything that's happening. Whereas in this one, you know, you focus on this fight with Old Man Logan and Forge versus a couple of the Inhumans, and then it just, you know, kind of tells you, oh, and while all of this was going on, something else happened somewhere else. But it doesn't have to, like, cut this down to two pages so it can fit in what happened here, so it can fit in what happened there.
Right.
So it gives it a little room to breathe, and it's not scattershot all over the Marvel Universe trying to show you everything that's happening with every single character. So I feel like you're getting a little better story flow out of it than what it could be when you have these two giant groups going against each other.
Oh, give credit to Sol and Lemire on that.
And the series is coming out on time.
Can someone explain to me, is Black Bolt still with Medusa or no?
No.
No.
Because there's a panel in Civil War 2 where she's in bed with some blonde guy, and I was like, who's that? Is it Johnny Storm?
It is Johnny Storm.
It is. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. That relationship started when Secret War, during the 8 months after Secret War, Wars and all new, all different Marvel.
Okay.
And even their like relationship is kind of, I want to say that they, she ends it with him in an issue of Uncanny Inhumans that happens like way before Civil War II. So if that is the case, then of course, Bendis doesn't adhere to
continuity, yeah,
all the time. So yeah.
Okay. Because I read like the Wikipedia entry for Black Bolt or something, and they mentioned how like he was given like 7 wives or something after like fighting Vulcan. I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense. So.
I remember that.
War of Kings or whatever.
War of Kings. Yeah, that was definitely War of Kings. I remember that.
I want to say it's been mentioned recent. Well, when I say recent, last, I mean like the last like 3 years. But they don't ever show any other wives. So
yeah, I think that storyline went away.
What else did we have from last week?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that terrible Monsters Unleashed thing. Didn't that start last week?
That was the week before last, I think. Because issue 2 is out this week.
Correct.
Yeah, we weren't fans of Monsters Unleashed number 1, so I'm not sure how many people read it.
I was lukewarm to it.
But we'll get to that when we get to the next week's books. Well, you're gonna bring up one, was it Agent 70?
Yeah, I was going to bring up... one of my surprise favorites of the week, because the book, you know, it's kind of been a little scattershot, and the book I'm referring to is The Totally Awesome Hulk. This is issue number 15. It has a pretty phenomenal cover on it by, is this Greg Horn?
No, it's
Stonehouse?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. The Stonehouse person is new to me, but, you know, the cover depicts... the majority of the Asian and Asian American characters in the Marvel Universe. And within the pages of this book, they basically team up to take down various threats and throw a benefit for a bone marrow drive, which is pretty, pretty off the beaten path. The story really is about, representation and showing up, and having the Asian and the Asian American heroes of the Marvel U kind of show up and represent on these pages. One of the interesting things, and obviously I would probably know about this best amongst the crew on episode 200 tonight. There's so many kind of in jokes for Asian folks who live near or around some of the bigger cities. You know, say L.A., San Francisco, and New York, because some of the dining and after party and partying scenes are pretty much straight out of like random Thursday, Friday, and Saturday and Sunday nights. You know, going out to get like Korean barbecue and then going to karaoke after. It's
pretty, yeah, I was gonna ask, was karaoke a big?
It's pretty event? Close to it's pretty spot on. It's pretty scary. So you know, it's a like if y'all came up to New York and said, you know what, let's try some Korean barbecue. And we went and got that. And then I'd say, well, if anyone's in the mood for karaoke, guess what? The karaoke bar is like literally right down the block upstairs. So it'd be a lot of, you would basically be playing out some of the story elements in this issue.
With us waiting to record reviews for last week until now, it gave me the chance to read this over the weekend. And yeah, I really enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, same here.
And there's a couple of heroes that show up that aren't depicted on the cover here.
Right.
We had a callback to, was it the Agents of Atlas?
Yes, Jimmy Woo. Yeah.
Jimmy Woo.
Who I know nothing about them except that they had a book during, Heroic Age, I think?
Correct.
And then, a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that's been hanging around Hulk. I thought someone else. Jimmy Woo, you said, was the Atlas guy.
Is the other
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he's the he's the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Yeah.
And the story continues in the next issue. So more goodness. And yeah, I like Mahmoud Azrar's art in it.
Definitely. And you know what's funny? You know, other than Shang-Chi and I guess Jimmy Woo, because they're the adult figures. It's almost like another alternate version of the Champions. You know, on this because there's two members here already.
Yeah. Yep. So, there was kind of a young and old thing going on, especially between Jim Woo and Jake O.
Sure.
They were talking.
Oh, I know. I was going to ask you, Agent 70, about the
fighting over the check.
Yep.
Yeah, that is totally true. That is totally, totally true. You know, fathers who take like, let's say it's like multiple families going out to dinner, fathers will fight over the check. And once you reach a certain age and you've got like money in your pocket because you've got like your first real job, you'll start fighting with your dad over the check. He's like, I want to pay. Give me. You know, it can get pretty funny. And I've been part of a couple of torn checks before. So it definitely does get like that.
See, that's always how it was for my mom and the old ladies that she would go out to dinner with. Because you'd go out to dinner and the check would come. Oh, I'll take care of that. No, I'll take care of that. No, I've got it. Well, I invited you out, so I'll pay for it. No.
That's cool.
No, I'm the guest. I'll pay for it. It would go on for 20 minutes and the whole time I'm sitting there like, if someone's paying, I'm ordering dessert. You know, like that's
absolutely.
It crosses barriers.
That's right. There you go.
All right, what did we have from DC last week? I guess Justice League versus Suicide Squad ended.
And it ended well.
It did. I liked the series.
If I can find it here.
I know one reason why I liked it is because it came out weekly, so there was no waiting. There wasn't that long a wait to see it play out.
Right. Like,
boom, 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 done. 6 weeks, 6 issues. It introduced, or reintroduced, I should say, I guess, villain, is it Despero, into the DC unit?
Eclipso.
See, yeah. I can't even keep up with these people. Eclipso, Despero, they all end with O's.
Hey, do the old heads remember when they did the variant, the what was it, the special covers for when they first introduced Eclipso back in the 90s?
When they put the gym on the front of the book?
Yes!
Terrible idea.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to remember... Eclipso, he's still, is he loose or did he get captured at the end of this? Anyone
recall? Yeah, I'm scrolling through it now.
Oh my gosh.
Totally don't remember.
Because it was like one of the first books I read that last week, so it's been a minute.
No, because it was Maxwell Lord, right, who was taken over by Eclipso?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
So he's in custody.
Killer Frost created a ice thing to reflect light towards him. That's how they separated Maxwell Lord from the Eclipso jewel, diamond, whatever you call it. And then the original Suicide Squad sort of dispersed to show up in other corners of the DC universe.
Right.
And Amanda Waller has Maxwell Lord, and she teased Task Force XI or 11.
11. Forcing us to use Roman numerals. This isn't the Super Bowl, lady.
Basically saying how the X doesn't stand for just, Task Force X. It was Task Force 10.
Oh, goodness. Well, you mean Weapon X was actually Weapon 10? Oh, no.
Yeah, I saw a couple articles about that.
That's true, right?
Yeah,
it is true.
Because Cap is like Weapon 3.
I thought there was Weapon 1, no?
I know he's within the first three of the... It's been years since I've seen the chart.
And did Grant Morrison introduce that?
I believe so.
Yeah,
I believe so. He started that, and I think they retconned Cap as Weapon 1 and moved some of the other experiments in between 1 and Wolverine.
Well, you got to fill up 1 through 9. So
exactly.
PCN Dirt, you were going to say something about Suicide
Squad? Yeah, well, all I was going to say is I liked the exchange at the end with Amanda Waller and Batman, where basically... she has put this whole thing, she allowed this whole thing to happen, basically years ago, put things in motion to get to this point where she could prove that the Suicide Squad, has a reason to exist. And that, as much as Batman hates to admit it, they need to be there because there are some things that they need to deal with.
Yes.
And it was just kind of a fun little plaything. Plus, you get the set, like, I hate Lobo. Like, I really do hate Lobo. It was a dumb character made to make fun of all the extreme characters of the 90s, and somehow he's still, like, why is he still around?
He survived.
But at least, like, they play him a little differently here, where he is, at least he has some level of honor, He's at least a man of his word, even if his word is sometimes... describing the worst things that he can do to people, at least he's, has honor in that sense. Mm-hmm. And so Batman, plays upon that as well, which I enjoy. And again, I thought the story was good for bringing together all these different threads from the DC universe, mixing things up, telling this big, you know, story where everybody gets involved, and then as it splits off, everything goes back into its own little subplots back throughout the DC universe. So while it, you know, it took over the world. I mean, Eclipso, you know, basically took over most of the planet, you know, took over the United States government, at least. You see, you know, thousands of people in the streets covered by it. But really, the way it brings it together and then disperses it back out gives it the ability to play with all of the DC universe, but then leave things where in 6 months they can pull one of those threads back up in a storyline in a book somewhere. Mm. You know, it gives them plenty of options to play with this thing, play with these things as they go off throughout the rest of the DCU. So I enjoy when they do stories like that where it doesn't have to end with everything completely finalized or completely open, you know, with some ambiguous ending. You have enough of an ending to the story that you have, but there's also enough there that they've left open that makes sense to leave open at this point that they can play with down the road.
Yeah, I was going to say, I felt like there was an ending, but while there was an ending, it, of course, planted seeds that could play out down the road.
Yeah, and like we know we're getting stuff like, you know, the new Justice League of America book and, you know, a revamping of Suicide Squad and some of that stuff that's going on. I mean, we kind of knew that going into it, but you can see where there's different stuff with the Emerald Empress and, you know, some of these other characters that kind of disappeared and took off. And you know, it's not the end of Max Lord either, so.
Yeah.
They have plenty of toys to play with afterwards, and they've given us a story that was fun to read.
I'm more surprised that, like, some of these villains hadn't appeared in the New 52 yet, or maybe they hadn't. I hadn't read a book with them, like Maxwell Lord and Eclipso. As far as I know, they hadn't shown up in the New 52.
Yeah, I kind of want to say Maxwell Lord did somewhere, but I can't remember where.
But even if he did, it doesn't really matter.
He was only, like, in the background of an issue, or maybe he was just mentioned or something like that. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the DC universe that they haven't touched since the New 52. So,
was Waller fat or skinny?
She's fat again.
But there's no explanation for it.
Well, nope. She's girthy, right?
Nope. I think the vernacular is thick.
She's fluffy.
Thick with two peepees.
Curvaceous.
That's something I like about the rebirth. Like, they just did things, and it's like, yeah, don't think about it. That's just the way it is now, and fans seem to have accepted it.
But I just want, like, a throwaway line, like, huh, been hitting the donuts pretty hard, huh? Wow. Good shot.
It's funny, like, we talk about Lobo here. You know, they introduced that slim, hipster-looking
right
version of him, and that character is actually still out there. He showed up in issue of Green Lantern, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps a couple weeks ago.
Because Lobo, like, clones himself from his blood, so is he one of those?
I don't even know how they explained it when that series, he had his own series going on, how there was two of them. Actually, it was something like,
I think Dirt explained it once. Yeah.
Yeah, there was something about the fact that he was an imposter who took the legend for himself, and he wasn't really the guy who killed everybody on his own planet. But I think that's been retconned out.
Yeah. But the hipster Lobo was a prisoner of Larflees, because Larflees had collected a whole bunch of planets and people, and the Green Lantern Corps, like, busted the containers, and then one of them was the slim Lobo, but, like, John Stewart was like, no, don't break that one, you don't want to let him out. And then, so there's, like, a him in a panel, like, looking pissed because he isn't let free. So, like, a little Easter egg. So, let's see. We also had Justice League of America, Killer Frost Rebirth, number one, which tied into this. And that's just a quick explanation of it. It showed, like, Killer Frost's last couple days in Bell Rev before she was let free to go to Batman's Justice League of America team. And Amanda Waller giving her a hard time. That's basically all it was. So I liked all these JLA rebirth one dots to set up the new series that comes out this month. And actually, while I'm running down things, Suicide Squad number 10 came out last week as well. And speaking of huskier Amanda Waller, this dealt with Waller and one of the members of the original Task Force X, or the original Suicide Squad, Rustam, going after her three kids. So that was news to me that Waller has kids.
No kidding.
Yep. They're right there on the cover.
Well, that's strictly on a need-to-know basis.
So. Yeah, seriously.
So that was good as well? Sort of a little side story to the crossover?
I like that. I really like the artwork on the cover.
Yeah. I wonder if it's the same. I think it's the same artist on the inside.
Cafaro. Actually, yeah, it looks like it is. Kind of hard to read the name, but it looks like the name is Cafaro, and that's the credits that are on there.
Cool.
I might flip through that, because that looks really good.
Yeah, it was like a little a quieter story. It's like Rustam trying to get revenge on Waller, trying to go through her kids. But he just like, he sort of threatens them, but he's actually not going to do anything to them. He just wanted like Waller to stress about her kids and show like the bad, like remind her of the bad relationship she has with her three kids.
So he's trolling.
Yes, he's trolling her.
Epic.
Epic troll. All right, what else came out from last week?
Yeah, I got one. Future Quest number 9. Wait, let me make sure that's actually... Yes, it was. I had to make sure. Future Quest number 9. It was a good issue. This was... it's no secret that I'm a fan of this book, but I guess the cover does kind of, sort of... It doesn't necessarily happen strictly like that says, but basically we have a meeting of the, or re-meeting of the disparate groups that were in play. So Dr. Quest and Dr. Zen escape from fear, and they get back to the other group who are, and everybody's meeting up in pretty much California at the Hollywood Bowl specifically, where Space Cthulhu is. And this is pretty much the story of them getting back, them either A, fighting it already, who are the ones amongst the ones who are already there, and people that are getting there to join the fight. Race Bannon gets one of the Space Ghost power gloves or power bands because he's still can't fight yet. So we see Race in action with that, you know, with Jezebel Jade and everybody else fighting along, and the Impossibles and Frankenstein Jr. or a bigger version of Frankenstein Jr. joins the fray with Johnny and them at the helm. And then at the end of the issue, Tara and the rest of the Herculoids who we hadn't seen in a minute, who were found by Birdman and the new Mitor, ends up joining the fray. But since they changed the backstory, well, I say it changed the story, I don't really know, but the story of the Hercules is that Tara and Xandor are from this planet or adjacent planet from where their story usually takes place. And that planet was kind of taken over by robots or something like that. So when she sees Frankenstein Jr., she starts to attack it. And that's where the story ends, because they were pretty much had Space Cthulhu on the ropes up until that happened. So outside of that, it was a pretty great issue. I enjoyed it.
All right.
I'm glad that book is found in the audience and you, Roddy.
No.
Just about to end.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, or does it? Because like I said, he did tease the fact that there's probably... It might be more to come with that.
All right. Well, Roddy, I was wondering if you had read Spider-Woman number 15.
Shit. No, I did not.
I don't have the bleep. I don't have that as part of my sound effect.
But yeah, no, I didn't get a chance to read it.
Just very quickly, then I will not spoil much. But not everything that has happened in the last few issues, especially with regards to Roger, a.k.a. the Porcupine, was as it seemed. I'll leave it at that. Exactly. And, ultimately, there's still the matter of Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew, basically taking on the weird criminal empire scheme of the current Hobgoblin, who basically, for a while now, has been acting as the seller of franchises, supervillain franchises, based off of supervillain equipment. And that's the idea behind this story, where, you know, back in the day, some villains may have owed debts to someone like the Tinkerer or other people who supplied them with their tech. In this case, it's actually the Hobgoblin, who is franchising supervillain identities and equipment once the previous owner of the tech or the owner of the license gets pinched, he's free to pass along the identity to somebody else for a fee. So, you know, based off of that premise, this story has come a long way. It's actually pretty good. I don't know how much longer this is going to go in terms of dealing with the story arc, but it's moving along pretty nicely.
Cool.
Are we in rapid fire for last week? Before we move on to this week?
Any little...
Let me get a couple of them out of the way. The crown jewel of the Hasbro universe.
Oh! Two.
Is there a gong?
There it is.
Cover B of said book.
It smells great. It's actually pretty nice.
Yeah, that's why I picked it up. Well, actually, that and the fact it was the only one on the shelf. But no, actually, I wasn't, because this one was ahead of the original one. And this book smells good, because I don't know what paper they're using on this one. But, like I said, and I don't know why that's the issue, but... Oh, wait, here's the actual... Either way, so, yes, the crown jewel still continues to be whatever heck it's going to be. So we have a set of Joes in China going up against the Dreadnoughts and some person called Crystal Ball, who I am not familiar with, but it's not Zartan.
Oh, Crystal Ball.
Yeah.
Stephen King wrote his file card.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
He's old school.
Yeah, so apparently he's the leader of the Dreadnoughts at this point or something. Don't know. And everybody else is there, including Satara and whatever the other one was. I don't remember. But yeah, they're going up against the Joes who were there, which is Roadblock's crew. They get duped into a trap. The Joes get duped into a trap and set by the Dreadnoughts, and then they're trying to fight their way out of that. Roadblock calls somebody in the shadows, who I'm thinking is probably Duke, more than likely, because he hasn't really been around in the Joe books, or at least in the recent Joe books as the leader or whatever. Let's see. Lady J and Gung-Ho are undercover in Greece. And they come across some Cobra sympathizers, some young folks, and who knows where they got, but they had to call it in, and they're doing all that. And then on the other side of it, Scarlet's got the Baroness in their... So Scarlet, those the Joes are set up in the Decepticons' undersea ship base for some reason. That's something that's out of Revolution.
Revolution,
really check all of that out. But she has the Baroness stowed away in a secret... jail cell, so she went to go talk to her for whatever odd reason. And there's things going on in this book. And then there's some I Must Break You Drago looking dude that was fighting Roadblock with a big cinder block hammer, which Roadblock ended up getting at the end of the fight.
That's Road Pig.
Okay, I'm so they didn't call him a name, but I didn't, but I wasn't sure.
Or maybe I didn't miss it. For it to be the crown jewel of the Hasbro universe, the art is dreadful on that book. it's from like the height of the manga craze back in like 2002. Like, it's just ugly.
There is kind of some of that to it, yeah. So it's a weird book, kind of, and it's even playing itself rather straight, but it's still kind of weird.
But it is the crown jewel of the Hasbro universe, because it says so right on the cover.
It absolutely does.
So. Is G.I. Joe or Revolutionary's art worse?
I don't know, because I hadn't read Revolutionary's yet.
I think Joe is worse, because I flipped through Revolutionary's, because Revolution was garbage. So, like, I can't touch anything from IDW's Hasbroverse after that. Revolution was dreadful.
Mask was all right. Or Mask has been all right so far. But
can I tell you that Revolution basically scared me off of ROM Space Knight for a while? Like, I don't know that. Yeah, I don't know when I'm going to go back to that. I'm going to take a look at some of our review copies and see if I'm going to jump back on, but it is off my physical pull list right now.
I hear it's not, anecdotally, not really selling out that well.
Right.
Mask was very disappointing spinning out of that, too.
You think so?
I thought so. After the first issue, I was like, okay, I don't need to come back to this.
Well, the second issue, you start to see the team kind of start to come into their own.
Okay. I like Black Tracker and everything, but like the sales are dreadful on that book, so I don't know if we'll get like a year out of it. That was clearly for the nostalgia crowd.
Yeah.
Isn't all their stuff for the nostalgia crowd though?
Yeah, but that one's purely like that's niche of niche. Like Hasbro couldn't even figure out.
Oh, you're away from your mic. You may want to check your mic, Will.
Can you hear me now?
You're a little low, but...
Hello?
There you are.
Okay.
You were saying?
I said Hasbro couldn't even figure out how to monetize that with toys, so that's why they just gave it over to comics, you know? Like, that there's a very small Mask fan base.
My Mask. All right.
And then another real quick, let me do Moon Girl and Denver Doors, also number quick, because that's probably, it's not going to necessarily tie, but this, something a book this week is going to tie sort of. We have team up between Lunella and Riri Williams, finally. Lunella gets the tag. She puts a call out to the other heroes. Nobody answers except for Ironheart, Riri, and then they fight who seems to be a Doom or a Doom bot. They don't necessarily fight him directly, but you know he sends off something to go after Lunella because she is the smartest person in the universe at this point. And you know, they're doing this thing, and then Lunella gets a plan to go off on her own and see who's behind all of this, and that's where Riri kind of ends up out the picture. And something happens where she gets shocked, and she ends up at Doctor Strange's door. So we're going to have a Doctor Strange appearance next issue.
Okay.
It's Lunella traveling through the, you know, the current hot titles of the Marvel U, right?
Seems to be.
I kind of I wanted to mention, you know, as part of my my rapid fire review, Will was mentioning earlier about how poignant Civil War II the Oath was, and how much more meaning it gained given the current political climate and current events. I know that former guest, friend of the show, Ryan Ferrier, Dave Books, you know, are based in a near future where robots have basically taken over the world. You know, Valentin Ramon on art does a fantastic job of depicting this kind of dystopian future where the robots have basically taken the place of humans and are now acting like humans. And they're acting so much like humans that they're basically reenacting some of our current events now, except in this, as a result of the assassination of a Roomba looking robot who was the president. Now Dave is basically running for president, and there's a lot of meta social commentary in this. If you're not reading this, I highly recommend it. You may not be familiar with some of the in jokes if you have not read the two previous Dave limited series, so I would recommend that you go back to read those. But if you're just looking for something that's interesting, somewhat foul-mouthed, but still definitely filled with commentary on what's going on today, pick this up. It's worth your time.
Yeah, I may try to binge the Dave 2 series so I can get to this by next week.
Sounds good.
And the only one I had to mention was Reborn number 4 from Image Comics, Mark Millar and Greg Capullo book. So it's mostly just the lead character and her father sort of exploring this new world of theirs. She's still looking for her husband, who's probably going to turn out to be the evil warlord that's terrorizing the land. And her powers, she, you know, of course, she's the chosen one, and her powers or gifts are finally starting to sort of manifest themselves, where she's basically like, at least the power she's exhibited are sort of super soldierist, where she can like look at a scenario and find the best option, and she knows how to shoot a gun and kick ass just out of the blue. This at least is what's been happening to her so far. But if you enjoy Capullo's art, it's definitely a highlight, as you see blood, gore splattering on the cover there. But it's a simple story about, you know, after you die, you go on to this new land where you meet up with people you knew from your previous life, except they're like reincarnated as different things, and childhood friends that may have had a grudge against you are now like bounty hunters that hate you and want to kill you and that type of deal.
Now, what happens when you die there? Because I dropped that book after 2 issues, but I was curious, like, because it seems like you can die again.
Yeah, well, they haven't explored that. That'll be something that he probably saves for like volume 2 or 3, if there is one.
After he makes the movie.
Yeah,
every series he does is just a movie treatment.
I like how all his books, you know, the minute they come out, there's the appropriate movie deal or TV deal made with it. But I wonder if all these things are actually going to come out, though, just because he has like a first picture deal with Fox or whoever.
Right, they may be like in development hell forever.
Yeah. But hey, more money in his pocket, I guess. That was the quick one I wanted to do.
Cool.
Clicks of the week.
Hey, wait a minute. I got a couple books.
All right.
Go for it.
Let's see here. Action Comics. Action Comics 972. This is the end of that story that kind of pokes fun at Civil War in a way. The agents from another part of the galaxy are hunting down Lex Luthor because they had a vision that he is going to become the new Doom or Darkseid and destroy everybody. And so they want to kill him before he can commit these crimes. And so Superman is fighting alongside him to stop him. And they basically have to convince these guys that the idea of attacking someone before they've actually done the crime is a bad idea. And of course, you know, before someone will listen to you, you have to beat the crap out of them. I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, we know how that goes. So there is that. But it's funny because as the story wraps up, we see a change in Lex Luthor. And one of the things he talks about is how you have this image of who you think I am based on the Lex Luthor you knew from this other universe, you know, because they know that this is not the same Clark Kent Superman. And he goes, you have to give me a chance. You have to give me an opportunity. And Lex Luthor, ever since the other Superman died, he picked up that Superman's cape and has been wearing it on his armor to show that he is taking the mantle of Superman. Well, he retires it. He actually retires the cape. He puts it on display in a case in the Daily Planet and walks away from it. So you do start to see that this is a different Lex Luthor. Now, I mean, I don't think you can trust him to be a good guy. I think we've seen enough, you know, shady, questionable things, but he definitely is a more complex character than, you know, the guy who, Superboy, you made me bald and now I'm going to destroy your life and, you know, followed with him for the rest of history. So I give him credit for that. And the only other one I really want to mention something about is the Iron Man, the infamous Iron Man. This is the one where Dr. Doom has taken over the role of Iron Man. And I don't really want to break down the story because honestly, not a lot plot-wise happens in this book. But the thing is, the character development in this book is really well done. The problem is the pacing. This is another one of those Bendis books where...
Yeah, I was about to say, who's writing this again?
Yeah. everything that happens in this book could have happened in probably like 6 to 10 pages. Everything that's happened in the first 4 issues could have been one issue of a well-written book. And instead, it just drags out and he puts all these... You know, I'm putting in conversations with people talking the way they talk. Well, that's great, but then you spend, you know, half the book in a single conversation a lot of times. I like the character. I like the, I guess you'd say the plot of the story, but the actual breakdown and delivery of the per issue of this is just terrible. And it's one of those books that I'm probably going to end up dropping and maybe I'll check out down the line when it ends up, you know, 6 months, it starts coming out
as a collected edition. Yeah.
Yeah. Or something like that, because it's just not worth it to wait a month to get a book where 5 minutes of stuff happens, you know, and nothing else really develops in the book. It takes forever for the story to move along. And it's a Bendis problem that I have with a lot of his books and a lot of the storytelling. I like the characters and I like how the characters develop in the way that, you know, they become quote unquote real and relatable. But the fact that, you know, if this was a TV show, this would be like the 10 minutes before the first commercial break, you know, and yet here we are 4 issues into it. And that's just something that he always runs into. So as a collected book, you know, it might work out a whole lot better to sit down and read it all as once, but just as a monthly, it's not cutting it. So that's all.
Good. So now we come down to the clicks of the week.
Mine's actually tough, but I'm going to go with Totally Awesome Hulk number 15.
I'm going to piggyback on that.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm assuming yours was Justice League versus Suicide Squad.
Yeah, and of course, like as soon as I switched it to the Hulk, I lost the Justice League Suicide Squad cover.
Oh no!
Find it in the folder here. There it is. Boom. Yeah, I like the crossover. It worked for me, especially the rapid pace that came out. And like I said, it left a lot of things where I know it can play out down the line. Oh, and beautiful artwork. That's another thing, is that all 6 issues had great artwork, even though they switched it up, in, you know, to keep up the pace on the book. But it felt top tier all along. It didn't feel like you had the low point of some guy coming in last minute to rush and fill in. So
yeah, they at least planned that part out pretty well.
Yeah, I think I'm going to third that Totally Awesome Hulk, because that really was as much as I like the Moon Girl and Double Dinosaur in Future Quest, that was really a enjoyable book. So
nice,
we were fans.
Yep. Shout out to Greg Pak.
All right. So now to books from this week. A little lighter load than last week, but still some good selection. Oops. Let's see.
Champions? That's a good
one. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Real quick, I picked up a variant for Champions number 5 this week. It's the video game cover. If you can put that up, Jordan, I'll put mine up for the camera.
Actually, I don't have that.
No.
We didn't get any of those in our store.
No way. So I picked this up. It's actually it's actually mimicking the X-Men side scroller like multiplayer arcade game, you know, in the cabinet.
And, oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is old school. You know, the old heads on the show will remember this game and pouring quarters into it with like your group of friends trying to take on, you know, like everyone choosing a character.
Oh yeah.
And hoping that your controller actually worked, you know? So, I see Will laughing cuz he remembers.
Yep.
You
all
right. Know, this and Captain America and the Avengers.
This was looks like it was a 1 in 10 variant. So you had to order 10 copies in your initial order in order to get it. And we do not sell that many copies of Champions.
Oh wow.
Man.
Yeah, there it is.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah, so 1 in 10 variant. So did you pay extra for it?
Nope.
Wow. Then you've got a nice store.
Yeah, I got lucky.
That's Carmine Street Comics, right?
Yeah, definitely. Shout out to Carmine Street Comics.
So this was another.
Mine'll do that sometimes if I catch them, like when they're still putting them out, or when they still have something to put out, and they'll just sell it for cover.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on if it's something like if you sell, say, 30 copies of it normally anyway, and you get 3 of the variants, you might not care that much.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're a store that sells, say, 8 copies, and you're like, well, we'll bump it up to 10 just so I can get that variant, then you're going to sell the variant a little higher. You know what I mean? Just to make up that difference. Just kind of depends on how much you're moving through. I know for, you know, someplace like Midtown, you know, they're ordering 100 copies. They're not going to care about a 1 in 10 at all.
Right. But a 1 in 10, they might actually mark up just a little bit. You know, even though they're ordering like thousands of these, you know, they probably would mark up a 1 in 10 variant. But anyway, you know, again, referring to something that Will brought up earlier, Champions is definitely a book that is set in the now and definitely, you know, puts its team of young heroes into a very much real world situations and real world concerns. And, you know, a recurring theme in this book, Will, I don't know if you're reading it yet, is, you know, you can't punch your way out of every problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a good job of letting Gwynpool get in the way.
Yes. That part kind of surprised me because I figured it was like, okay, what in the world is this issue going to be when they put her in there like that? But they kind of played this halfway, even with her in it.
They played it straight.
Yeah.
They played it straight in that, you know, she was the intruder. She was the X factor. So, you know, it was very much a straight, you know, like, you know, she wasn't just integrated into the team just like that.
Right.
So, another good addition to the series, I'd say.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Batman 16 started I Am Bane.
Oh, no.
So the highlight from the issue was the Bat family getting together at a Batman themed restaurant to discuss the game plan.
Oh, my gosh. Like, that is just... That was one of those things where... I stopped reading the story at one point just to look at all the stuff in the background and all the stuff on the menus. And,
yeah.
What do you mean, Jokerize my fries?
Yes.
And like Damien and Jason Todd almost getting a food fight.
Yeah, he buys Damien a Happy Meal, which of course Damien doesn't want. He's like, oh, you'll like it. There's a toy inside. He's like, better not be Red Hood. Better not be Red Hood. Pulls out the Red Hood. Damn it.
I actually felt like this was the first issue where like King like got to have fun.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because all the, you know, the majority of the storyline's been the storyline
pretty depressing and sad.
Yeah.
And dreamy.
Like the only like humorous parts has been when he's inserted like no name villains that no one remembers from the DC back catalog.
Right, and they're getting punched in the face.
Wait. Are you downplaying the significance of the Kite Man appearance?
Kite Man.
Oh, no.
That's the one I couldn't think of. I was going to say Glue Gun or Glue Guy or something.
Those are bad.
But yeah, the discussion, like, you know, Bruce basically lays it, you know, tells it. So everyone in attendance, so everyone knows, it's Dick, Grayson, Jason Todd, Damian Wayne, and Duke Thomas. So he lets them know that, you know, Bane's going to come for revenge to Gotham. They need 5 days with the Psycho Pirate and Gotham Girl, so Psycho Pirate can cure Gotham Girl. She's going to do, like, sessions with him once a day, and he doesn't want any of the Robins and Duke's help. And, of course, they're like, we are going to interfere and help, right? It's like, just so that's known. And then there's a nice little shocking last page that'll turn out to be a fake out, more than likely, but it was like, oh!
Yeah, exactly. Definitely a cliffhanger last page right there.
So, I enjoyed it.
It was good. I liked it too, for all the same, you know, for all the reasons that you just mentioned. I was just scrolling through it again. I did actually get a physical copy of this book this week. Referring to what Dirt was saying earlier about some of the real Easter eggs and sight gags from Batburger, aka Fatburger. Night Wings was on the menu. Robin Nuggets, a KGB LT.
I mean, wait, Robin Fish sounds wrong. I mean, that just
you know, a two-faced sandwich.
That was good. It's like, how much time did they spend just on?
Yeah,
he was sitting around getting drunk at the bar with some friends. He's like, "Oh, come on, more bat puns, come on."
That was pretty good.
I did like that fake out at the end. I mean, obviously, it's not, you know, what you think it's going to be, but it just kind of plays on some of those classic 70s stories, you know, that always have that shocking thing. Although a lot of times it'd be on the cover.
Mm-hmm. You
know? Robin dies at midnight, and you're like, what? No! You know, some of that type of stuff. Obviously, it's not what it is, but it makes for that fun kind of ending to throw on there.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on, is there a Mr. Frosty Freeze shake in there somewhere?
Oh, no.
If not, there should be.
There should be.
I'm just saying, missed opportunity.
Start tweeting now.
Yeah, seriously.
Let it go.
They'll be back.
Oh, man.
If nothing else, Batman will direct a fight with somebody towards it just so it can be demolished. Go out of business.
That's funny.
All right.
Actually, let me real quick run over to Dark Horse for a second for this Baltimore, the Red King.
Oh, I didn't get a chance to read that. How was that?
Actually, this is really good for jumping on. Baltimore is set after World War I. And basically, after World War I, like, the vampires decide that they're going to break out and take over the world because mankind, you know, they're going to kill themselves off. And then they have
because that's what they do every night? No.
But anyway, that was like the first book. And then in the second book, you find out that this evil demon king is going to come to Earth, but he gets trapped in a human form and they try to find him, but he disappears and then fights these witches and then he fights against the Inquisition and like all this stuff has happened over these different series. And this book opens with a recap of all the stuff that's happened as a group of priests are trying to track down this missing member of their order. And they're like relaying the facts of what's been going on along the way. And so if you haven't read any of these books, like, this is actually a great one to jump on with. And it actually sounds like this may be one that wraps up a lot of the stuff. But it is all laid out at the beginning. So if you haven't read any of them, you can easily catch up. It tells you who all the characters are and what their roles are, the way they have the conversations when they meet up with their friend and they're telling them about everything that's been going on in the world. And then Baltimore himself is a soldier. And he's actually disappeared. So there are people trying to find him. So, of course, they're talking about some of the stuff that he's been through and, you know, whatever. So as far as development of pushing the story forward, you know, this book doesn't really add a whole lot other than, you know, they do find Baltimore. So it, you know, if you've been reading the story, then you catch up. You do get that step forward. But I think this is one of the most perfect examples of how when you have – 6 mini series in kind of this ongoing series, like this issue right. Shows you how you can do a recap where it's kind of pushing things forward, but it's really throwing out those life preservers to everybody who may have gotten lost along the way. Maybe they missed one when they came out. They were buying them in trades and they missed a trade, or, you know, or whatever.
This is the first issue.
Right. Or if this is the first time that they've ever come on, this is where everybody gets caught up to speed and you're all on equal footing from here on out. So I was actually really impressed, because I admit I sat down and kind of went through Wikipedia real quick before I went down to read this, because I wasn't sure how much of everything I remembered. And then I started reading it, and everything is laid out in here. And I'm like, oh, well, I didn't need to go look any of this stuff up at all, because it's all laid out here in the book. So if you've ever been interested in any of that, you know, Mignola-verse outside of Hellboy stuff, if you've ever, you know, or you read the original novel that they wrote that kicked off the character of Baltimore or any of that stuff, this is a great place to jump on, because you're going to get up to speed and you're going to catch everything. So there, that's it.
Cool. Good weekend. Yes, we got.
Here's one. Unstoppable Wasp number 2, where we have another guest star of Lunella Lafayette, Moon Girl. So Nadia's looking for a, she's, as of last issue, she starts to get this idea about getting all of the girl geniuses together into a group, because the list of geniuses is pretty much male dominated, with exception of recent, you know, the recent change to it. But we find her in a house, apparently doesn't have a good grasp of telephone, or at least old telephone technology, because she didn't know how to answer
a landline
phone, which is kind of funny because she's so smart, but she's still kind of loopy in some things. But Jarvis comes by. She hears her dad's voice on the answering machine, and she gets a call from Jarvis, who comes by to try to take her to immigration, but she ropes him into actually starting to go recruit for this girl group of hers. And she doesn't start at the top like you think she would have, but she starts in Washington Heights with this apparently new character named Tyena. I can't remember her last name, and her sister, who's quadriplegic and is apparently good at robotics. She runs her spiel down to the girl and looks like she's in. And then Tyena's like, did you actually go to Lunella? And she's like, oh, I forgot to do that. So that's when the issue goes to meet up with her. And in the course of meeting up with her, this giant rat attacks them. And both of them thinking, well, let's try.
Oh, because it's New York, right? Is that what they're saying? Is a giant rat because it's New York? What?
That's probably the case. We don't know. Hey, you know, I can't speak for homie. So they fight that, and Nadia ends up finding out what was the cause of this big rat, who seemingly is because of some tech that she's familiar with from her days in the Red Room. And she was spent like the whole half the issue talking about this old friend of hers named Ling, who just happens to come back at the end of this issue. And that's where it ends off, because apparently this person's maybe trying to take her back to the Red Room. We're not really sure.
But you know what? I had forgotten about the new Wasp, you know, kind of convoluted history, and I look at her costume now, and it really does kind of mix elements of the Black Widow costume with the Wasp costume. So they definitely do, you know, pay some homage to you know, the Black Widow characters that have come out of the Red Room. Mm-hmm. You know, now that makes more sense to me, now that you remind me of the character's origin.
Yeah, that was something that was brought up in the midst of this issue about because she was, you know, not as hesitant. She doesn't know when to. She doesn't know where to stop talking in certain cases. And I say that because it's like she's just going on about some stuff like her relation to her dad and Ultron, and the fact that, you know, he made Vision, and Vision's her niece, her, I guess, nephew or something. And
like then, second cousin, first.
Yeah, something like that. And then she starts talking about, Vision's got a daughter now, so that makes me a great niece or something like that. And, you know, that whole conversation was just kind of out of the blue, because I think it started where she was talking to the other girl, and she was talking about making a robot sister.
All right,
like, okay, she has her dad's penchant for wanting to make things that could potentially go evil.
Understood,
and not recognizing that fact. But
all right, so how are you liking the character development here so far? It's only issue number 2.
I'm digging it. Like, I'm not sure. You know, how far it's going to go, and, you know, what's gonna, if this is going to be something that's going to stick around for the most part,
or find an audience.
Yeah,
you know? Well, because I wonder how long. Audience,
and it might not. And it's probably not me, but
yeah. Will shaking his head no. He'll make it 12 issues.
Well, yeah. It's funny because I've gotten in a lot of fights online lately about like diversity legacy characters, and mm-hmm. like she's the one example I hate. Like, I'm fine with everyone else. I think things need to grow and change. I just hate that character. Like, I feel like she was shoved down our throats at the end of that, like, last Avengers run. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, she's too cutesy and happy. Like it's sad. Like, she's a positive, optimistic character, but I just hate everything about her.
It's like, I've kind of taken it as, like, she's parts of her dad and, weirdly enough, parts of Janet from the old days.
Not her mom.
Exactly.
Right. Who's not her mom, so
exactly.
But see, this that's another thing. I hated Janet. Like, if you go back and read like some like 70s issues, I just want Janet to get hit in the face.
No.
Yeah, but well,
no.
I mean, not,
oh, that's terrible. No,
that's terrible.
That's awful.
It's okay. She's not real.
It's real to
the views expressed by one who's guest on the show are not necessarily the views of the entire Comic Chronicles. Please send all hate mail to @WilliamBQuest.
Will's done his job of making episode 200 memorable.
Yeah, that's...
I will say her sort of coming out of nowhere seems kind of odd with Wasp and aka Janet still around.
Well, yeah, but when you got two Captain Americas and, you know, two Spider-Men rolling around.
Like, I guess so. I was going to say...
Janet was too accepting of her, though. Like, Janet's kind of a bitch. And, like, the way she took to her was kind of surprising. Like, I thought she was going to have to prove herself, but Janet was kind of like, I don't really want to do this hero thing anymore. You can take it.
Nah, I'm not going to say... I wouldn't call her I wouldn't say she was... being a bitch, but I do agree with you about the fact that she was a little, I'm like, wait, I figured there would have been a little bit more of a pushback on this than Janet did do, so I agree
with you. She won her over with her cuteness.
Or something, I guess, I don't know, who knows. I thought that was kind of weird.
Let's see, Avengers number 4.
Get around to that,
A book that the new Wasp is a member of. Right. So, you see all these people on the cover, they're not really in the issue.
Yeah, I was about to say this was kind of a weird follow up to the last issue.
I enjoyed it because I am not in depth with the background of Kang the Conqueror,
right?
And this was all basically I took it as an origin story of Kang the Conqueror.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. It's kind of a streamlined telling or retelling of Kang's origin. It definitely. Is a retelling for the modern fan or the current fans.
Yeah, I think it's been a while.
Right. I would just mention that this made me actually go back and look at Avengers number 3 and see how that book ended. And there is absolutely no continuity between the ending of that book and the beginning of this one, which is what kind of threw me for a loop. As you said, this is literally like a retelling of Kang's origin.
The continuity, I guess, is the ending of 3 and the ending of 4, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Is the art as ugly as it was in the first 3 issues?
What?
I was about to praise it. Yeah.
What?
Nah. It's beautiful. Too dream sequency to me.
Yeah, but it's nice. Was it painted, watercolor, whatever style that...
Del Mundo uses. Oh, it's awesome. We're fans of Del Mundo's art.
I just don't think it fits in his book, though.
Right. I've seen stuff of his I like. I just don't like it for Avengers.
Yeah.
That's why I like it, because you wouldn't pick him to be an Avengers book. But there he is.
Right. Mm-hmm. I like it because it's got, there's definitely some drama to it. There's some mood to it. And that's why I like it. I definitely agree. I mean, listen, I'm the George Perez Avengers guy here, and I know what you mean when you say, you know, it doesn't have that kind of look, that kind of very specific, detailed look that an Avengers book usually has. But at the same time, I think it's stylistic and moody enough that, you know, it definitely sells what's on the page, even though there really isn't a lot of action. A lot of the images are kind of static, but it still really does tell a good story.
Did he do Uncanny?
Uncanny Avengers.
Did you do a stint on that?
No,
because I feel like there was an arc that probably would have played better with his art. That seemed reminiscent of his art in there. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
He did the Weird World.
Right, you're thinking of Acuna.
Oh, is that who
yeah,
it was?
Daniel Acuna.
Okay. Yeah, you're thinking of Daniel Acuna.
Okay.
I mean, it's, you know, there's definitely that watercolor finish that they have in common.
Even Matt Wang is a fan.
Shout out to Matt Wang 97. Who also pointed out that, you know, when we were talking about Batman number 16, about Damian getting in his Batmite meal of Red Hood action figure.
Oh, yes. How was, you know, I did read it. How was Superman number 16, PC and Dirt?
Fabulous. Hey, we got the return of Captain Carrot. So that right there is worth $1 million.
Oh, no. He didn't really do anything, though.
But he's, look, he's even on the cover.
Oh, no.
I mean, and he's a little bulked up, to be honest, on that cover. But still, they do show him flying around later on in the book. So fabulous. I like the stories. I like the multiple Earth stuff. We got at least a reasoning from this villain about why he's doing what he's doing. Basically, he's grabbing everybody's powers in an attempt to make himself strong enough to fight the some sort of oncoming threat. And so, you know, his idea was he was going to steal all these superpowers from all these supermen from all these different universes in order to become strong enough to face whatever this oncoming threat is. So we know that there's something big out there. It's probably another Darkseid, reference, something that's coming. But again, this is another one of those issues where I'm one of those guys who likes to sit there and look in the background where you see all these different Superman characters with the different logos on their chests, you know, try to figure out which version they are. Like, oh, there's the Golden Age version, and there's the version from that one Elseworld story, and there's the one from Batman Beyond, and, you know, you have all that stuff going on again. But this issue, it also brings together new Superman from the series that's set in China with, Clark Kent, Kal-El Superman. They even talk about how this is not how they wish their, you know, first team up would have gone, is coming together under these circumstances. But they spend time together. Oh, and apparently, frog tastes just like chicken.
It does.
Somebody was wondering. So
it does.
So at least they got that accurate, right?
Yep.
And then we got another appearance of the mysterious character that may or may not be Ozymandias from The Watchmen, or some version of him as transposed by Dr. Manhattan. That guy makes another appearance and has a little monologue at the end. So, again, another book that wraps up the story and then leaves threads. We know this is not going to be the end of the Justice League Incarnate, as they are known. Hopefully not the end of Captain Carrot as he makes his triumphant return in the book. So a lot of fun with me being the multiple Earth, parallel universe type nerd that I am. I love this story. I loved everything about it. So great book. And it just really made me happy. It reminded me a lot of my childhood. So there you go.
Cool.
How do you guys feel about the new Superman book? Because I love it. The one in China.
Really?
I gave up after the first two issues because they made the character such an a-hole that I just didn't want to read more stories with him.
I bailed too at like issue 3 or 4.
See, I like a-hole characters like Damian Wayne because there's like some heart to him if you like wait long enough, you know? And I felt like it's very predictable, but it got pretty good, I felt. Like, I don't think it has legs. Like, I don't think it's going to last too long, but I've enjoyed it up through, like, issue 8 or wherever we are right now.
See, I think the difference to me with a character like Damian is that he's just overly confident because he has accomplished so much so early, whereas, what was his name? Keenan?
Con Keenan.
Yeah. He's just a bully. He's just a bully and mean and,
right.
It just got to the point where I'm reading it and I'm like, I don't like this guy. I don't care what happens to him. You know, like they could drop a building full of kryptonite on him and he's dead. And I wouldn't, you know, mourn the loss of the character at all. So, you know, I just gave up reading it because
right.
There's nothing they could do.
Hmm.
Did anybody read Justice League from this week?
No.
Okay. Well, I can save you the time. Don't.
That's
been my philosophy on this, Brian.
It's still Hitch.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's definitely not as bad as some of the other stuff that we've seen, but this story is... This would be the backup story in an annual, maybe, or the third story in an in a you know collection of you know just random tales. This does not work as a standalone story in the main Justice League book. Basically, some massive thing from outer space attacked Earth, and they all get trapped in the rubble underground. And as they're regrouping and recharging and trying to strategize on how to attack next, they have this long conversation about how they're not sure they trust each other, and you know, Power Ring needs to be more confident, and no one's quite sure what to make of Superman because they all know that he's not the real Superman from their world. And Superman says, well, in my world, Batman had all these plans to take everybody down. Are you any different? And they all look at Batman, and he's like, yeah, I did that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it was just kind of one of these things where, like, it's a fine story, but not for your flagship title, for your main team book, you know what I mean? Like I said, it'd be the backup story in an annual or part of an anthology or something, but not... Because the attack, like the whole attack thing, is just barely there as enough to show them getting punched through to the ground. And then they bust out at the end in order to, you know, stop this grand thing from attacking Earth. And that's where the story ends. So the story is basically just them having this long conversation as they're trapped in the rubble underground. And it's just not intriguing, you know?
Yeah.
I got done reading it and I'm like, well, that's it. Like that's like, there's nothing that happens in this book other than they talk it out. Like, well, that's great, but that's not what I want to pay $3 for. You know?
So it sounds a lot like my problem with Young Justice as a cartoon, because the one episode I ever saw was after a battle where they're in therapy and people say that like, well, it's important because you needed to see the like battle and like, but I hadn't seen it. So that painted my opinion of it and I just hated the show. Well, it's like just looking at the cover, it says regroup. And I guess like something big maybe happened in the last issue. I'm still on that Rao series, so I haven't even gotten to this one yet.
You're in the pre-rebirth.
Yes, story. Yes. So like maybe it was meant to be just kind of like a filler down issue, just so they could regroup, you know, for something big coming up.
But the attack that they're reeling from, and the attack and the battle that they're getting ready for, is not the issue that came before, and not the issue that comes after.
Oh. Like,
the whole battle that they're regrouping from in the middle of this book is a battle that you don't see and you don't really know anything about. So it only exists as a MacGuffin to just get them underground in a bunch of rubble so they have to talk it out.
Gotcha.
Now I remember the episode of Young Justice you're talking about.
I had the thought after reading whatever the most recent issue of Trinity, I was saying if they want like an artist to be the artist and writer for Justice League, like Hitch, I guess at one point was, they should get Francis Menapool to do Justice League, because Trinity's good.
Yeah.
Justice League, not so much.
Trinity was good until that last issue where I was just kind of like, they expected me to read that Poison Ivy book that nobody read.
They quickly referenced what happened in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. I guess could we probably get this rapid review time so we can get to the news.
Or just real quick, there were actually two Marvel Hip Hop covers that came out this week. One was the cover for Bullseye number 1. I'm going to hold that up here.
Do you know what that one was?
What the homage was?
Yeah.
The homage is to, I had to look this up, Vic Mensa's There's a Lot Going On. And there's a sound effect for that, and that is... And
hey, that was my favorite album of the first quarter of 2013.
Oh, no. And there is the homage. Well, you know what's funny is that it's not a number one issue. It's Monsters Unleashed number 2 had a hip hop cover as well out this week.
Cue that same sound effect.
Yeah, pretty much. Because so I didn't have a chance.
They're breaking protocol by giving hip hop covers to non number ones.
They did it in the first round because they did it with, I think, All New Inhumans number whatever. And that issue is worth a lot of dough because they didn't print that many. People didn't expect to see it. I don't think people knew that they were going to do non-number one issues because they actually homage, I believe it was Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight cover, and it was an issue of All New Inhumans. And it's impossible to find, and it's got a decent markup on the secondary market.
Like, I'm sure it's a rights thing, but it kills me they don't give you the reference picture, especially in like the collected edition.
Yeah.
Like, I understand it might be kind of hard in the issue, even though they could sneak it on like the page with the digital code. But right. Like the collected edition, they don't even have the source like there. And I mean, it's not very educational if you don't know that much about hip hop. Like, exactly. You're really scraping the bottom of the barrel for some of these things.
Right. And Will, if you've been listening to some of our recent episodes, or at least to our year end, our 2016 year end, one of my biggest criticisms and one of our biggest criticisms of the hip hop covers is that, like you said, they are somewhat scraping the bottom of the barrel. They're somewhat really, you know, they're kind of reaching here where the initial effect of using the really truly classic album covers, kind of hit us in that nostalgia, sweet spot, and, you know, really kind of spurred us along to try to collect them all. I'm getting to a point now where I may just stop getting them unless I actually recognize the cover.
Right. I'm already at that point.
They boxed themselves in a corner by giving that rule that they couldn't. Artists couldn't have more than one hip hop cover.
Yeah, but now they do.
Oh, they do?
Now they do. They absolutely do.
I'd done that already. I mean, that was still going on. I didn't think that was a rule.
I remember them talking about it when it first started.
That's it. That's the All New Inhumans number 5 that put up on the screen. But yeah, they've broken that rule with this current round because the latest round there's going to be a second Jay-Z cover. There's already been with the All New Champions cover was the second Wu-Tang cover. You know, it was Iron Flag, whereas yep. They had already done 36 Chambers in the first round.
Well, and here's something like this Monsters Unleashed variant. In order to qualify to get this variant, you had to meet or exceed 100% of your orders for Civil War II number 6. So basically, you have to order the same number of Monsters Unleashed 2 as you did for Civil War II number 6 just to be able to order this variant.
Hello, right. Midtown Comics. Yeah.
I mean, that is ridiculous for them to go, oh, Monsters Unleashed? Yeah, that's going to be just as popular as Civil War II. You got to match your orders on that.
Especially one final issue of Civil War II compared to like the second issue of this event that no one probably cares about.
Hmm. What do you mean no one cares about? This is the hottest event in Marvel that they've seen in decades.
This is the hottest event of the year that we're 2 months into.
Goodness gracious.
What about Monsters? Did anybody read Monsters Unleashed 2?
I did. Nothing worth writing home about.
I'm going to flip through it, but...
It's the truth.
Nothing to write home about. And then, of course, our favorite artist does the art in it.
Yes.
Oh, Greg Land, you had to say it.
I read a book from Oni Press.
Nice.
Did you know?
I guess they're doing like their special dollar issues, dollar number one. So I read letter 44 number one.
Yes. Nice.
Cool. Yeah, that is Charles Soule.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought wait, isn't that an old book?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, they're up to like 29, but they've just re-released the number one as like the dollar. I am a huge fan of that series.
It's pretty good. I liked it.
I was told I would like that book, and I think I still have a copy that I hadn't read yet.
Yeah,
I think I got it when Comixology did whatever free stuff at one point.
Yeah, I think so. Same here.
I've actually got my copy of 29 sitting here. I just couldn't remember what week it came out, if it was in the last 2 weeks or not. So I didn't. I think
it was last week.
Was it?
Yeah. Because that's one of the few I did get to. Because it's supposed to wrap up around like 36.
Oh, well, it definitely feels like it's getting there.
Oh, yeah.
7 more issues.
I mean, well, no, it's just like, hey, you remember this character dead? Hey, what about this character dead? What about this character dead? So you can tell they're getting somewhere.
Right.
So this is part of my ongoing 2017 resolution to read a book from all the different, at least one book from all the different publishers a month to keep up with. I don't have to read multiple books from Dark Horse and the Oni Presses of the world, but at least find one. Stretching my wings. Anyone else have anything from this week?
Sure, I got
Star Wars. I'm sorry, Roddy. I was telling Tim, I was on mute. So read Dave from IDW.
Yes, that'll be, and that's good because of the series.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Roddy. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. It's all good. Star Wars Darth Maul number one. So I don't know why, and this halfway kind of put me off, but I was still into it. But there's a lot of internal monologue going on in this book.
Well, that's because we never heard him talk in the first
place. Yeah, the guy doesn't speak, so it's got to all be in his head.
Yeah.
He does talk in the issue.
On the cartoons, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, spoiler alert, you know, he does talk in the comic, so.
Yeah, but this obviously takes place before episode one, because outside of his recent turns in Rebels and previously in Clone Wars, we don't really get that total much out of him. But he is still, I guess this is at the point where he's still under Darth Sidious' thumb. But as in true, you know, Sith fashion, Sidious has a plan, but, you know, trying to keep Maul under wraps until that happens, because he almost runs into some Jedi and almost takes him out, but he disappears before that happens. But he's still allowed to, like, go out and hunt animals and whatever, and okay, some beasts. So, but Sidious sends him out on a mission with the Trade Federation, I believe it was, or whoever it was.
Yep.
And then he finds out some information about a Jedi Padawan that is being sold, that was captured and being sold, and he decided to takes it upon himself to go after this thing instead of telling his master, because, you know, that's what it's to do.
Yeah. Real quick, there's actually a tie between this issue and The Force Awakens, and the tie between this and Force Awakens is that, if you guys remember, the creatures that Han and Chewie had on board the cargo ship, the creatures that got loose, the Rathars, those creatures appear in this book.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what Maul is basically hunting for sport at the beginning of this issue. And it was kind of cool, because when I saw it, I was like, wait, that looks really familiar.
Mm-hmm. And I remembered it from that. I was like, okay, weird, but I just put it on my head. So.
You know, and yeah, I didn't read the issue, but I saw that Chris Iliopoulos was on the cover as a credit, so I did read his little
his backup,
story at the end, whatever it was, the two little robot buddies.
Yeah, it was kind of cute.
He does great stuff.
Yes.
I just opened up the credits page, because I did the same thing. I saw his name on the cover here, and I was like, oh, did he do something? And I didn't see his name listed on the cover page, or the credits page, so I was confused.
For the main story. It's a
backup story.
Yeah. Yep. Right.
But they gave you that backup story so they could charge you $4.99 for this issue.
That was the weird thing, picking up the physical copy of this book. I was like, wow, this book's kind of thick. And then I realized, like, usually when I get my physical copies, I usually get the codes out of them and then bag them.
Right.
So it was really weird to have to actually read the physical copy now.
Mm.
Thanks, Marvel.
Yeah, thanks for nothing.
Basically.
Clips of the week, or...
Rapid fire?
Yeah, I don't see anybody else to make anything.
Yeah, I got one book. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead,
okay, I'll get my one book out of the way. It's Nova number 3.
Actually, I was going to talk about that one. So.
Oh, really? Okay, good. I'm a sucker for for a book that has Cosmo on the cover. You know, as soon as I saw Cosmo on the cover, I was like, oh, I'm going to take that one home, because, you know, he's going to play a big role at some point in the book. It was really cool to see Cosmo back in action. You know, we have Titus and Death's Head, the original Death's Head, you know, taking on the Black Nova, a.k.a. Sam Alexander, and Nova Richard Rider. And, you know, there's definitely a back and forth, and we are shown what Richard Rider's current status is. He's obviously, it's, you know, since issue number one, we've known that all is not as it seems, all is not as it used to be, because there are some definite new, possibly cancer-verse related changes to Richard Rider that exhibit themselves in this book. So he's kept them from, he keeps them from Sam Alexander throughout, and we're left on an interesting note with a cliffhanger. It's actually the cover for the next issue. I'm not going to spoil it just yet, even though it is in the solicitations. But, you know, it's interesting to see that Richard Rider Nova is, you know, despite what I mentioned earlier about the alterations to the character as a result of his stay in the Cancerverse, that he's kind of acting, you know, pretty, you know, like we would expect Richard Rider to. So that's a, you know, it's a cool little suspenseful corner of the Nova story going on right now.
This may have been asked before, sorry, but did his escape from Cancerverse, did that come out here or somewhere else?
I don't recall offhand.
Well, I don't think they ever really explained how it happened. Hmm. Just that Sam, when he was being attacked at one point, made the mental, let's see, how did it go? Richard Rider's consciousness had been uploaded to, like, the Nova computer. I want to call it the hive mind, but I'm not sure that that's correct. But somehow Sam connected to it, and he met Richard within it.
World mind.
There you go. And somehow convinced him that life was worth living again. And brought out, like, when he had joined this with this computer system, he became a very analytical, withdrawn, you know, being, and seeing Sam and talking to him brought out the human side of him, and somehow he decided he wanted to live again. But we don't know how that really took place, what, you know.
Right, that's still to be revealed.
Right. But what I did like about the book, though, is that it does add kind of this dark undertone to it.
Yes.
The book with Sam has always been super upbeat. The book with Richard Rider was always war and fighting and massive devastation and,
right,
you know, all that stuff going on. So the two coming together, it's like you can't immediately go like, oh, the Annihilation Wave is back, you know, or something like that. But it is the first, it feels like the first baby steps kind of nudging it back towards, hey, there's a giant universe out there. Hey, there's a lot of bad stuff that goes on. Hey, there's a lot of, you know, you almost think of it as being like a metaphysical thing, but it's really just like weird stuff happens in space that you can't explain with the science on Earth, you know, type of stuff that happens. So it's like a slow nudging kind of back towards that direction. And I like the way that they're, you know, they're just kind of, again, nudging it as opposed to just saying, okay, Richard Rider's back. Now we're going in space for giant space battles, you know. It's dipping the toes in the water, kind of getting you used to the idea of reconnecting with all those parts of the bigger Nova core and all that kind of stuff, weaving its way back in. So it's been a lot of fun, and I think we are seeing Sam, you know, grow up a little, which is good, but it still has that lightheartedness when it needs it, and it's not, you know, completely abandoning it. This is another book that my son and I both read, and so it's, you know, it's one of those books that works on a good level for both of us. So it's an enjoyable book.
Cool. All right, you had something else to talk about? I'm done.
Okay, well, I was going to talk about Moon Knight and Old Man Logan. And they both actually kind of go together in a sense in this review. Jeff Lemire is the writer on both of them. And for anybody who's been reading Moon Knight, or at least, you know, heard us talk about it, you know that there's just been some crazy stuff going on in that book. Moon Knight's one of those characters that had so many different alter egos over the years and so many quote-unquote histories and versions of the character that this book has basically explained them all as working together because the guy has mental issues. He's got multiple personality disorders, and so that's why all these different versions seem to come up again and again. And as you read the book, you're never quite sure what is reality and what is just something that's messed up in his mind because of the way his mind works, or what's happening on a different realm because he is dealing with these old Egyptian gods and, you know, all of those types of things going on in the background. So you're never exactly sure what's real and what isn't, and what's, you know, just him being crazy. And it's a similar type of thing that's actually happening now in Old Man Logan. And in Old Man Logan, he's having a really hard time keeping his mind focused on the here and now because everything that's happening somehow harkens back to the life he left behind in the alternate timeline where he became older and he had a family and he had kids. And now his mind is actually starting to get to the point where traumatic events are happening and they're triggering these memories and he's getting caught up in the memories. And so now when he comes back to reality, he's not sure if he's like, is this reality? Was that reality? And if this is reality, am I really seeing it right? Or are there other things, you know, that my mind is placing within reality, because now it doesn't make sense of where I am now compared to where I was before I blacked out and started having the memories and whatever. So, I was just going to say, it's Jeff Lemire writing both books. So it's not completely surprising that they're, you know, you'd find a little bit of the same themes going on in both, but it works for both characters. And Moon Knight's been an incredibly great book. And Old Man Logan has been really good too. Dealing with, you know, the fact that there was this whole life that he left behind that's no longer there. And the way that it's flipping back and forth between the memories and reality and the way Moon Knight has been doing that between the mental issues and the other world plane and the real world, they both are hitting those similar themes, but they're both doing it really well. So if you've liked Moon Knight and you've been reading that, I would say go pick up start with issue like 16, maybe. You don't have to go back that far even in Old Man Logan to get caught up and to follow along with the story. You're going to find some of those similar themes here, but it's really well done. And on the flip side, if you're reading Old Man Logan and you're like, hey, this stuff is really interesting and cool, the way he's flipping between, then go back and read Moon Knight. I think this is the perfect bridge. You know, if you're enjoying one, go check out the other, because, you know, they're both working along those same lines and they're really well done in both titles.
Yeah, I'm way behind on. I was just saying I'm way behind on Old Man Logan.
I'm like 4 issues behind on Moon Knight. That first arc was really good.
Yeah, and Moon Knight keeps teasing you with like, oh, it's going to end. It's the final confrontation, whatever. Like, nope, no, it's not. The story still goes. It's like there's always another trick or another, you know, obstacle that he comes up against just when he thinks he's towards the end, which, you know, I'm sure is part marketing ploy.
Sure.
Part wrapping up the trade, but at the same time, it's put together a really good story.
Cool.
Do we know if Old Man Logan ends after this arc? Because it doesn't seem like there are really plans for it after, like, Resurrection.
They're going to change
creative teams. Because he joins Weapon X. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Lemire is leaving and Sorrentino is leaving, and they haven't announced who the new team is, but probably for April, so this has come out this month. So we might find out then. Yeah. Or May. Actually, it should be May.
Well, let's see. This is 17. Old Man Logan 22 comes out on 4/26, and it is still Jeff Lemire.
So, yeah. And it's February, so 3 months from now it'll be May. So we might find out this month.
And it's Logan versus Wendigo and the Hulk all over again.
Yeah, that's how they're ending it, their run.
So, all right. Anyway.
Clips of the week.
Clips of the week.
Hmm.
All right, well, I'm going to pick Superman if for no other reason than Captain Carrot.
I'm going with... I think I'm doing Batman 16. It's between that and Letter 44.
But that's Letter 44 number one.
Yeah.
You got to catch up. You got 28 more issues to go.
I'm in between Champions number 5 and Batman number 16.
Yeah, I'm in between Champions and Unstoppable Wasp.
Let me go with...
You know what?
Right? Seriously, I'm just like,
Champions is really solid and always is, but I'm going to go with Unstoppable Wasp number 2.
You know, I'm gonna second Batman number 16. I liked Champions. I like the fact that they did treat Gwenpool as a, you know, as an aberration. But I think that Batman 16 was a good first issue of the I Am Bane story arc. All righty, so we good?
We good.
All righty, so we'll do our first ad read of the night before we get to the news. Help us keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, or apparel. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment. Ching, ching! That helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
Cinematic news. See what happened over the last 2 weeks. Cloak and Dagger TV character descriptions and synopsis were revealed. And of course, you find out who the actual stars are later. Yep, there it is. Marvel's Cloak and Dagger have been cast.
Yep. There's a lot of this dude named Tim Adams wrote a lot into the news this week. What's up with the cat?
It did. I wrote nothing today because I was working on my nice little video review for Powerless.
Nice.
Which is actually out also. Wait, is that also out? Because I saw you tweet something about it.
Yeah, it came out after the episode ended. So, yeah.
But that's all nothing today because we did last week's news last week.
Oh, okay. So it's all this week. Cool.
Yeah.
Even better.
Nice.
Let's see. Disney XD's Animated Avengers series had a Civil War finale, which I did an interview for.
It was good. The interview was good, and the cartoon was good.
Yes.
I watched the whole thing on demand. It was pretty awesome.
I'm looking forward to the Secret Wars season 4. how that's going to shake out. Oh, and Doug, you'll like this. Steve Wacker said that one storyline he'd like to adapt from the comics to animated is Superior Spider-Man.
All right, I'm in.
He said he doesn't know how to do it, but that's one. That's one he'd like to do.
Can he make a better ending?
I believe there might be an article about that in the news, or not that specifically, but
we shall see. Legends of Tomorrow producer teases mystery character appearances. Tomb Raider reboot cast Dominic West as Lara Croft's father. Guardians of the Galaxy's Nova Corps resembles stormtroopers in early concept art. RZA directed an episode of Marvel's Iron Fist.
Because of course he did.
Spider Island's Pure Spider-Man stories could come to Disney. It's the animated series. Well, actually, Spider Island will, I think he said. What does Ben Affleck's departure mean for the Batman?
Well, his departure from directing.
So direct. Well, there's also a rumor about he might step out from the character, but I don't know how true that is. That was something that kind of came on.
Oh no!
A couple of days after.
That's got to be a rumor.
Yeah, because I hadn't seen anything concrete of it. It was either rumor or speculation going on that one.
Rogue One, a Star Wars story, Blu-ray, DVD release possibly revealed.
I hope to God they put out the 3D version with it and not make me wait 8 months. Because with Force Awakens, they just released the regular one. They didn't release the 3D one until like November. So I had to wait. Like, I didn't buy it. You know, my kids kept going, hey, let's watch that. And I'm like, nope, I'm not buying it till it comes out on 3D. I want to watch the 3D one.
You and your fancy 3D TV.
Yeah, and? If you got it, you want to use it.
I mean, yeah, true that. Oh, you skipped one, by the way.
What did I skip?
Han Solo movie starts shooting, and the working title was revealed. Or maybe the film, the production version. Which I think they call
Black Panther.
So that was cute. Yeah. Red Solo Cup.
Is the Soul Stone in Wakanda in the Black Panther movie? I had not seen that story.
Seemed to make sense, if it is.
Jack Kirby, Alan Moore, others celebrated in new Warner Brothers documentary series. And that's coming from the digital network Machinima. How do you say that?
Yeah.
Baywatch actor is in talks for Black Manta.
To which I think it was confirmed he actually has it.
No. I know he's in what Baywatch is he from? The new
reboot? He's in a new one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it says upcoming Dwayne. Wait, yeah.
Yeah,
stars DC's upcoming Black Adam, Dwayne Rock Johnson, so it's the new one.
Nicole Kidman is in talks to join Aquaman as his mother. Zach Stentz announces last night's The Flash will be his last. Last night being Tuesday nights. So he's a, writer on The Flash?
Consulting producer.
Sony admits selling Spider-Man merchandising rights were short-sighted. I'm sure Marvel would say the same thing about rights that they've let go over the years.
Yeah.
Well, they were saving themselves from bankruptcy. I don't know if it's really that short-sighted, but
yeah.
You know, I think the way they drafted their contracts were probably pretty short-sighted.
Yeah, I don't think they knew at the time they were going to get bought by Disney, so it still could have been kind of...
Might not have been around to get bought by Disney if they hadn't sold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Supergirl cast Terry Hatcher in mysterious new role.
Lois Lane. I'm just kidding.
Hey. Ashley. Something to think about. So this came out today. Black Lightning drama eyes moved to the CW to join Greg Berlanti comic lineup.
Well, didn't I say this was going to happen eventually?
CW they're
all going to come out on CW. DC.
I mean, it seemed
inevitable. The DCW.
It has a better shot on the CW because Fox would cancel it.
Yeah.
How come they haven't canceled Gotham?
Because Gotham's too crazy to cancel.
Because Batman loosely related to...
Although I hear this episode from this week is starting to get a little closer to some semblance of that.
I've heard people talking highly of it this season, but I refuse to watch it.
It's been just as crazy as it has been, but it's been a good kind of crazy, I think.
At least there's going to be a Black Lightning, I guess, series.
Yeah. So how long until the CW changes their name to Comic Book World or Cartoon World?
I hope they just call him Lightning.
All these.
Black Lightning's going to be kind of on the nose.
Hugh Jackman explains how he approached playing older Wolverine and Logan, and Marvel revealed the cast for Runaways, the series on Hulu, and Captain Marvel takes center stage in a new video series. And in the comic book news, Image at 25.
Happy anniversary.
And let's see. Captain America Sam Wilson sides with Black Lives Matter. When did that
happen? 18, which is coming out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's in the solicits, probably.
Probably. Marvel reveals last issue. It makes sense, I guess. I don't know. Anyway.
Marvel reveals chilling vision of Captain America's secret empire, which we talked about. Gentle Giant Scotty Young group and Rocket Raccoon statue is the best thing ever. DC just teased a rebirth rival of three super teams, and that was coming out of Justice League versus Suicide Squad. Jessica Jones and Daredevil have pop finals.
Or getting. I think Jessica Jones is out now, and the Daredevil one is coming.
Kim and Kim, Midnighter, Love is Love, make shortlist for GLAAD Outstanding Comic Award.
As did Black Panther.
Congrats to the nominees. New DC comic reinvents Snagglepuss as gay Southern Gothic playwright.
I mean, if you kind of think about it, that makes hella sense.
Hold on.
So that's come as the writer is Mark Russell from DC's Prez. Let's see, Supergirl cast.
Oh, it's the writer of Prez. Oh, so they're going to cancel it.
Oh no!
It's a Hanna-Barbera series, so
that's an 8-page story. So it's not even a series.
Oh, really?
And it's going to be part of one of the annuals.
Oh, I thought it was going to be an actual series.
No, that's not what it says here.
See, that's how they treat that guy. They wrapped up Prez in the Catwoman Election Night special.
Oh, wait. Which? No, it is going to be a series because it says it down at the bottom. It's like, yeah, the Snagglepuss is going to start after his Flintstones run ends in 12. At 12.
There you go. Marvel's Royals promises giant mythos-shaking revelations. Artist Dan Spiegel passes away. Long Beach Comic-Con expands with Critters-Only Conference. This art of Kamala Khan isn't just gorgeous, it's for a great cause.
Yeah, some Dave Mack art. That looks pretty good.
Black Canary confirmed for Injustice 2 with a new gameplay trailer. DC signs Javier Fernandez, artist on Nightwing, and Jorge Jimenez, artist on Superman, and the upcoming Super Sons that comes out this month to exclusive deals. I like both artists, so that's good news. Marvel Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 dancing group figure is finally available to be bought. It takes 3 AA batteries.
I'm totally getting that. I saw that. That's pretty cool looking.
And finally, our good friend Brian Michael Bendis sends a care package to a young Spidey fan hit by a car.
Yeah, he sent him like 40 comics, but he doesn't tell you that that was like one story.
Oh!
They were like 4 years old too. He was showing pictures of like Spider-Man and all these things that don't even matter anymore.
Oh no.
It's the thought that counts.
Yes, sure. It is the thought that counts.
Yeah, the thought was I got these old ass books lying around. Oh, there's a little Negro kid I can send.
Oh,
oh
no. Poor kid.
Hey, if I was a kid and I received like a box full of comics, I'd have been
jazzed, yeah.
What's he like that now?
He doesn't know any
deep. Yeah. And thank you. Shout out to Martian Cat for congratulating us on 200 episodes.
Yeah.
Hey, if anybody's interested, Comixology just got a sale on Miles card. Ends on the 6th.
Nice. I own all of it already, but what are you going to do?
Hit us with the ad read.
Oh, no, I was about to say, before we get to the ad read, why don't we talk about the honor that we were hit with today by being featured.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so we were featured on the, I guess, homepage of iTunes Black Experience podcast section.
Yes. No, we were listed in the perspectives and interview section of the Black Experience as we start Black History Month. And, you know, shout out to Classic Materia for letting us know this morning. There's some great stuff. If you go to iTunes, if you open up iTunes, if you use iTunes, you can go to that and open up, you know, the podcast pages for that. And if you go to the @iTunes podcast Twitter feed and click on the link that they provide, you can also see what the page looks like and check our Twitter
to see what the images look like. It's a great honor to be featured there.
I want to know who selected those photos and who thought, like, showing my receding hairline is the main focus of my portrait. Like, why do you think I'm wearing this mask?
We had to set that up with a classic mate, our podcast, yeah, he's art.
Troll.
That's too funny. You know, you got to love the different poses that we're all doing,
yeah,
too.
So yeah, since I'm on a Google phone, I'm going to go to that iTunes link to see what it looks like.
There you go. And in the meantime, I'm going to do our last ad read for the night. This episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and BB-8 like, thumbs up, and Droid Evolution, inspired by Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and many, many more are all on sale at any time. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us first. That's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner, and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
And we'll let people know where they can find you online.
Oh, you can find me at williambrucewest.com. Every Friday, I have the West Week Ever, where we look at the week that was in popular culture. Or you can follow me on Twitter at williambwest.
Check out his 2016 year in review as well. Good read.
Absolutely.
And make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Agent 70 is at Agent_70 on Twitter and Instagram. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And
at CB Caps on Instagram. And happy everything.
Happy 200.
Happy 200. Double
size issue.
Yeah.
Drink, fellas. Happy Black History Month. Happy Expanse premiere. Happy.
I need to watch that, I guess.
It's pretty good. I hadn't read the premiere, but last season was good.
And Doug is at PCN_dirt and go to popculturenetwork.com.
Oh, and at Graham Reviews on Instagram.
No, it's Graham Comic Reviews.
Ah, there we go. I was hoping you would correct me.
Get it right.
And I have played with the format so that it works better on Instagram than it did on Vine.
Nice.
He's a man of many talents.
No, I've got like two talents.
Oh.
And they're both talented. Anyway.
Yeah. And with that, we'll be back next week with episode 201. We got the Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! It's Dr. Doom!